Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today, I'm pleased to have Drina Burton talk about her brand new book, Let Them Eat Vegan. When you make your own food from scratch, it's not only more economic, but it helps you to connect with your food, where it comes from, and actually who's growing it. The more that people choose to shop consciously, the better it is for the environment. Only when people understand the devastation caused by factory farms operating in a monoculture environment will they understand just how devastating this impact is. That is why more and more people are making the transition to veganism. Plant-based diets are not only more humane, they're healthier. Now, in Drina's book, Let Them Eat Vegan, she has 200 deliciously satisfying plant-strong recipes for the whole family. I mean, she's got so much stuff in here. You'll find what I happen to appreciate the most was all these recipes for the veggie burgers. I mean, it's amazing how much you spend on some of these foods that you've become kind of accustomed to eating because it's just simpler, especially if you're limited with time or if it's just a matter of convenience. You know, it's the springtime season is here, and everybody's schedule is getting really hectic as people's lives are just, you know, going in all sorts of different directions. And the bottom line is that many people do not want to buy products that are in the store that, regardless of whether or not they're organic, vegan or not, some of them are processed, and it's something that kind of defeats the purpose. So in Drina's book, she has so many wonderful recipes, and they're so incredibly easy to make. And she also includes a lot of her own personal bits of advice as far as what she likes to do and why. And I thought that that was a very nice touch. But also, these recipes are so kid-friendly, and there are so many teenagers and tweenagers that are making this transition, and it's a really nice trend to see. So I would like to welcome to the show Ms. Drina Burton. Good afternoon, Drina.
Hi, June. Thank you so much. That was like a great intro.
Oh, you're very welcome. I get really jazzed up when I read a book that has recipes that are not just kind of recycled recipes with a different tip mm-hmm. or flair, whatever you want to call it. But it's interesting. I had been thinking to myself, you know something, lately I'm buying a lot of these vegan burgers just because of the fact that it's a very busy time of the year for me, and I want to make sure that my meals are balanced, but you know they're also healthy. And I just realized that, wow, I spend an awful lot of money on these vegan burgers that are ridiculous. I mean, with all the talents that I have, I should be able to whip them up in a heartbeat. And then all of a sudden, I get a copy of your book, and I'm like, wow, this is like the Mac Daddy of recipe books that has so many recipes in here for, I mean, there's other recipes in here that are wonderful, but the ones that I personally appreciated were with the vegan burgers, and I couldn't get over how many recipes you had with chickpeas. And I've been kind of limited with what I've been doing with chickpeas only because I'm still relatively a new vegan. So for me, and I love chickpeas, but I didn't realize that you could do as many things as you've described, and I think that this is just fantastic.
Thank you. It's funny, I have a friend who calls them chickpeas, and I think they are pretty chic. They are more versatile than we think, and, you know, I think a lot of people grew up if they ever ate beans, it was probably in a chili, and, you know, along with ground beef or whatever, and they haven't had a whole lot of exposure to beans. And I love beans. My recipes have always been pretty bean-centric, and yeah, I like to show that you can use them in different ways, whether it be a burger or a casserole or a salad dressing or a pasta sauce. There's tons of things you can do with it, and spreads and dips and all kinds of things.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When you think chickpeas, you don't really make that connection to hummus, and then once you realize how much hummus costs, you're like, maybe I should start making my own hummus.
I never buy hummus anymore, and for a couple of reasons, because, number one, we have three kids, and for how much hummus and other bean spreads we eat as a family, it's too expensive, and our kids don't like the commercial hummus because it has that... it either is kind of stingy with garlic, or it has that citric acid flavor that comes through.
Yeah.
And they notice it. They have, they eat so much whole foods and just good, wholesome food that they pick up on that stuff now. So I just, you know, put together triple, quadruple batches of hummus and, take out your food processor, do it once, triple the batch, and then freeze portions. It freezes really well. It thaws really well. And it's kind of, it's in rotation, and you can do different varieties, and it's there for you.
You know, it's interesting how many kids are eating hummus. I mean, the manufacturers are getting pretty slick with the packaging. They're starting to make little bite-sized portions, I guess. And, I'm seeing it with other types of foods that are not organic, but in the whole conventional foods market, it's amazing how smart these marketers are. Mm-hmm. They understand that the kids, kids are always going to be attracted to anything that has a cartoon character on it, they are also quite aware of the fact that, they should be eating more whole foods and not all the junk. And so what they're doing is they're trying to make things like peanut butter, yogurt, whatever the case may be, more appealing to kids. But the bottom line is that there's a lot of sugar, not to mention the fact that if it's not organic, the kids are consuming all the pesticides that were used to grow these foods, and that's a very big problem. And also with so many kids having different issues, food sensitivities rather, the gluten-free issue is a very big concern as well.
Absolutely, and I do a number of gluten-free recipes in the book and give gluten-free options. Even with things like burgers, sometimes if you buy a veggie burger, a lot of them have the wheat gluten in them, or even if they don't have the wheat gluten, they'll have something else in there with, it might be wheat flour or something like that. And making veggie burgers at home, again, it's easy. I think people are intimidated by veggie burgers because they think there's a lot of steps. There's usually some sautéing of, onions and such like that, and then you're moving to the food processor, and then you're making the patties. But I created at least three or four recipes in this book that don't even involve the sautéing process. It just goes right to the food processor. You get your key ingredients in there, whiz them up. It's only a matter of shaping patties and either baking them or doing a real quick pan fry, and they're ready. And they taste great, and there's no funny stuff in there, and they're not too spicy for kids, because, again, that's another thing is sometimes you buy these veggie burgers and they have, like, some really strange spices in it that kids won't eat, or they're just dry and unpalatable, and, you want something that tastes good, and you can make them for much, much cheaper.
And some of them, actually, they have, like, I've seen some brands that I haven't really heard of. Every so often the local supermarkets will carry something new, and you figure, okay, let me try this. I'll try it once, and then, maybe I'll compost it, maybe I don't want to upset my compost bin, I don't know.
If it's not good enough for the compost, it's not good enough to eat.
Yeah,
right?
the appearance of some of these veggie burgers, and it's interesting. Burgers were never something that was part of my it was just not something that I would really lean towards as far as meal selection. I was never a big burger person when I ate meat, and now that I don't, it's really got to have some flavor to it. So unlike many kids that don't want all the spices, I really want something that has some flavor to it.
Yep.
The vegan burgers that are on the market, I don't know if it's just because all they do is they just take a bunch of tofu and just mash it together, and I don't know what else they do to it, but it's just, it has no flavor. And or yeah. It has like that typical, I wish I could describe it better, but there's like a distinct flavor with some of these vegan burgers that just, you really have to dress it up with a lot of lettuce, tomatoes, and then the veggies, or some spicy hot mustard, just to be able to digest it, or just to be able to bite into it, even. And that's something that kind of turns me off. But with you, I mean, wow! How long have you been making these veggie burgers?
Well, it's interesting because I find with every book, something seems to stand out with people with my different books. And for this book, a lot of people are talking about the burgers, so it's really cool. And I started this theme of veggie burgers with this book because I was chatting with one of my girlfriends who also has, her kids are vegan as well, and she was sort of saying, you know, geez, they don't like the veggie burgers. They're always picking out something from them, or they don't like the onions in there, or they fall apart. And I said, you know, that's true. Sometimes the homemade veggie burgers fall apart. I'm going to come up with some that are nice and sort of sturdy but taste good and have flavor, but they mightn't be spicy, but they have flavor. And so that's kind of what got me going with this one. I've got the nutty veggie burgers, and they're based with almonds and walnuts, and they've got zucchini and carrots in there and oats, and it's all blended up, and it's just so, like, satisfying when you eat it. It's so filling and satisfying, and it stays together. And then there's something like Mediterranean bean burgers where there's some olives in there, and they're made with kidney beans. And so there's flavor, and my kids love those. They have, like, oregano in them and olives and good flavor, but they're not that, like, strange taste that you talk about. And maybe that's what my kids pick up on with some of the commercial vegan burgers. So yeah, that kind of just got me on this process of coming up with burgers that were kind of diverse, with different ingredients, and tasted really good, and, you know, would hold together. You could put them on a bun, or you could stick them in a pita. And the other thing is, you know, you can use leftovers and put them in sandwiches, or you can, some of them work well to make as a loaf, too, and you can then have it, like, with a vegan gravy. So, you know, they're a little more versatile than you think, too.
Before we talk about the gravy, because that's something I definitely want to talk about, I just want to discuss briefly the fact that you didn't use any olive. You decided to use roughly chopped Kalamata olives for this Mediterranean bean burger recipe. So the Kalamata olives with kidney beans, that is a really interesting combination that I would never have thought of. I mean, it would have probably accidentally, the two might have met on my plate at some point, but to combine them together in a recipe, is that something that you've done with other recipes, use the two together?
I'm trying to think. I often use olives with chickpeas and white beans. I can't say I've used it with kidney beans before, but I really wanted I wanted the burger to have that color of the kidney bean burger, kidney beans. So that's what got me on that process. And I was adding some tomato paste in there, so I knew it was going to take on that color. So I wanted to use the darker bean, and I just like using different beans too, because we do love chickpeas so much in this house, and the kids love them. I just kind of like, you know, switch things up, and they're nice smooth bean, you know, nice sort of creamy smooth beans. So they work really well with the flavors. And
That's really fantastic. I mean, I taught culinary arts for about 12 years, and I had never thought to combine the red kidney beans. Well, I guess you could use the light red kidney beans as well, but the kidney beans with the Kalamata olives, I think that's just brilliant, especially the robust flavor of the bean combined with the olive. That's got to be one flavorful burger. Now, would you say that's probably one of the favorites amongst not only your readers, but, you know, just family and friends?
I think it's certainly one of our favorites, and the nutty veggie burgers are a favorite too. Like, our kids love those. A lot of people have come back saying they love the Mediterranean bean burgers for sure. And the mushroom pecan burgers are pretty big up for people too.
Now, Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say, they do have one more step. There's some sauteing with those, but people do love those because they just have, again, lots of good flavors going on in there.
Now, I just want to talk about the nutty veggie burger for a minute. And now, folks, in this recipe, it calls for raw almonds, raw walnuts, pecans, small clove of garlic, sea salt, ketchup, nutritional yeast, tamari, thyme, and dried sage. That's what basically caught my attention with this particular recipe, because sage is completely undervalued. People think sage, I mean, in just traditional cooking, sage is often associated with Thanksgiving, because people would put it to make their, you know, stuffed bird or their stuffing. Mm-hmm. And sage has such wonderful flavor. And I just thought that, you know, once again, out of all the spices that you could have used, or the herbs, should I say, this particular herb is just, once again, fantastic, especially combined with thyme. That's a great combination. Just out of curiosity, I'm kind of fascinated because I can make a feast out of ketchup packets, but it's just, you know, when I come across something like this, I'm in awe because it's like, how come I didn't think of that?
It's so fun to talk about this. My husband's getting a total break from my foodie talk. I play around with seasoning sometimes, and I really love the flavor of fresh thyme anyhow. Like, it's one of my favorite fresh herbs. I love fresh basil. I really like fresh oregano, and fresh thyme is one of my favorites. Just a little bit of that dry thyme and sage in there, like, it's not much, but just enough to kind of give it a little sort of back note or something.
Yeah, and combined with the nuts, though, that is really something. See, with sage, I grow a lot of sage, and even though I have an abundance of sage, maybe I need to experiment more, especially with just some of the dishes that I'd like to make, because sage, I kind of feel, is such a strong herb.
It is.
I would never think to combine it with thyme. I use thyme in sauces. I use thyme on potatoes. Mm-hmm. I love roasted potatoes with thyme and some olive oil or other vegetables. I think thyme has just such, it's not as strong as oregano, but it still has a nice flavor to it. But sage tends to be very powerful, and there are a lot of people who are just like, it's a little too much for them. And what I typically use sage for in sauces is I'll take the vegan butter spreads, and I'll melt that down and add some freshly chopped sage, just so that the essential oil in the sage adheres, or should I say incorporates with that, the butter, and then I'll put that over fresh pasta or vegetables, what have you.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a nice touch, but the combination of the sage and the thyme with all these nuts, you're talking about a lot of powerful flavors here, but combined, if you think about it, that's a really dynamite combination. Take my hat off to you, ma'am.
Thank you. And the kids, you know, they don't pick up on any of, like, sometimes they'll pick up on herbs if they're very strong, much like you say with sage. And if I'm using rosemary, sometimes we'll find rosemary too much. But there's just a little in there, so it's not like they are overwhelmed by the flavor at all. They're just eating it up.
Yeah, it's always great to find things like this, especially when, you know, you're talking about different types of foods, because you get sick of eating the same things over and over, and sometimes I'll make the same things just because it's convenient and it's easy, and I know it's a healthier option than, doing something different that, you know, might not resonate with my system. But I guess when you kind of have a routine, and especially if you're limited with your time, you try to do the best that you can. But when you come across recipes like these, I mean, the recipes, they don't look as though they would take terribly too long to make whatsoever. And just a combination of the herbs that you use, just brilliant.
Thanks. And I would like to add that, yes, they don't take much time. And something like these burgers, they freeze well too. So, I mean, if you wanted to do up a couple of batches on the weekend, then they're in the freezer. You can take them out. You've got them for the week. So, you know, it's so quick and it's not expensive. And, you know, it just makes sense to make them up from time to time.
Now, when you make your burgers and you're preparing them so that they're uniform, I found that especially if you're making anything for kids, kids tend to be a little finicky. What I usually do is I take the old my old plastic container, or if I have a wide enough coffee mug that's you know, fairly decent size, and then what I'll do is I'll press out the mixture, if you will, and then I'll try to smooth it out so that it's even. And then I'll press out the burgers so that they're kind of uniform in shape. Do you have any particular method that you'd like to share that you use?
That's a great one. That's a great idea. I tend to freeform with my hands with these burgers because you know, it's just what I've gotten used to doing. But when I make if I make them into, say, balls, sometimes I'll do that and bake them. And I do have a walnut pecan ball recipe in there too, and I'll use a cookie scoop to you know, get those, and so just a small cookie scoop for that. And then that's for me the easiest, either using a large or an ice cream scoop, something like that, just to get out the size and scoop it out, and then you can just quickly pat them into a nice shape and get them in the oven or pan fry them.
How do you freeze your burgers? Do you have any particular method to keep them from getting freezer burned?
Yeah, that's a good question. I use, you know, airtight containers like a Ziploc or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just put a little bit of parchment in between each patty, and that way they're easy to take apart. And
yeah, the parchment paper is fantastic, isn't it?
Oh, it's a wonder. It's the greatest thing. I mean, from baking to cooking, and then like this kind of thing where you want to freeze things in layers without them sticking, and then a little bit of plastic wrap over the top, pop them in the freezer, and you know, they're probably good for a month or two without getting freezer burn. Ours don't usually last in the freezer that long, but yeah.
I tend to do the same. I found that the parchment paper really works best. It's funny, when I was little, my mother used to use wax paper.
Yes, and my mom did too. That's right.
A lot of people use wax paper,
yes.
And what I found with the parchment paper was parchment paper is great because you can actually put it in the oven when you're defrosting, and you can bake with parchment paper. So, you know, this way you're not just using it for one purpose. You can repurpose the paper and bake it in the oven. But there's a company. It's actually Canadian, and I wish I could think of the name of the company, but I ran into some of their staff at, I think it was the New York Fancy Food Show, and there's a company that, I'm sure there are a lot of chefs out there or foodies out there that know the company, but they're Canadian-based, and the paper that they use is not treated with any chemicals. And I wrote down the name of the company, but there are a lot of companies that are, you know, trying to produce the same type of materials where, you know, you don't have all these chemicals, you don't have all this stuff. And with wax paper, you know, that's paraffin wax. That stuff is derived from petroleum.
Right.
So all the more reason to get away from it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, some of the parchments aren't bleached. They're like the natural color. And I may have bought that one myself because I know there's one that I buy that is not the bleached, it's just a natural parchment, but I don't remember the name either. If I come across it, I'll email it to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, my next question is condiments. I have had so many issues with condiments, and for the most part, I make my own, but I actually had a friend say to me, you know, how do you make vegan condiments, especially if you have gluten-free issues and you're just very sensitive, and also, you know, maybe if you're just picky. I mean, for me, if I want ketchup, I'll make my own ketchup. But, you know, not everybody has the time nor has the desire to sit there and make their own condiments. Plus, I mean, I have to give away a lot of my stuff because there's only – how much ketchup does one person need?
Right. Well, our kids could eat a lot. Kids are different. Kids would eat ketchup on cereal or something. But yeah, I do a number of like dressings and sauces and dips and things in this book because I really like that. I mean, I'm a flavor person, so I love having sauces and things to accompany, you know, a casserole or a grain or even a patty or to put on salad. So I love making dressings and sauces and dips and things like that. So, you know, I have a chapter called Saucy and Dippy and say I'm a little bit of both because I just love making those sauces. I've always loved sauces, like from, you know, the time I was a kid. So, you know, another thing with this book is I don't use, you know, substitutes that people are trying to get away from. I mean, it's totally fine when you want to use them and for convenience, but not everybody wants to buy vegan mayonnaise or vegan margarine and that kind of
thing. Exactly. And that thank you for bringing that up. I meant to bring that up as well. I thought that was really nice for change where, you know, you're making people think about what's in their food. You're forcing them to really reconnect with, okay, well, you know, if I'm buying this, it doesn't matter if it's organic and it's vegan, but if you're buying a butter substitute, if you will, you know, it, once again, it's something that people used to make themselves.
Right. Right, and there's things, you know, and everyone likes to have a little bit of convenience, and it's fine, but do we need to cook with it all the time? Or do we need to bake with it all the time? And, well, I kind of say, no, we don't. There's things we can use that we have at home all the time. That are basics, like our beans and our nuts and our seeds and vegetables, and they can be, you know, employed in pretty simple ways sometimes to make a sauce. Like I have a substitute for mayonnaise, and I make it with almonds, and I call it almonaise.
That was just fantastic. I'm actually going to make some of that this weekend. I thought that was just brilliant, because if you think about the almonds, there's a lot of fat in almonds. I mean, it's a good fat. It's not a bad fat. Unfortunately, the F word here, that word, people tend to get all bent out of shape, and they don't realize that you need fat in order to live.
Yes.
And unfortunately, nuts have had such a bad rap because of different nutritionists and dietitians and people that, I don't know if they knew what the hell they were talking about, but they really gave the whole nut industry a whole bad rap, and it's a shame. But that was such a great recipe. What prompted you to come up with that? Were you just like, you know what, there's got to be something better out there?
Yeah, well, for one thing, I have one of those big blenders, you know, the Blendtec. Some people have the Vitamix, and they're so good at processing nuts and seeds into really creamy textures. And so I had been doing a lot of things with cashews, like I have some cashew sauces in there. And, I just started playing around with almonds. And I'd add, like, a little bit of dill seed or celery seed. My kids aren't they're not the happiest when I add the seeds, but if I leave it out, they like it. But that little bit of celery seed or dill seed just gives that note that you'd like to have, for a spread on a sandwich or a veggie burger or something like that. And I'm so glad you brought that up about nuts because, you know, there is that sentiment of, sort of being a little bit wary of fat. But when you have kids, too, I mean, they need to have these good fats. And I have no problem with my kids eating nuts and nut-based burgers and things like that. It's whole foods, and it's good for them.
Interesting. I just want to point this one thing out. There's this product that they're pushing all over America, it's Nutella, and the commercial goes, there's just a hint of cocoa. And it's hysterical because when you look at the package, the stuff is junk. I can't understand why people would give this to their kids, but it's giving the parent the illusion that they're giving something healthy to their kids. And honestly, it reminds me of, the chocolate milk mixes that are just a little liquefied that have more like a flavor of some type of nutty flavor in it. And I just can't understand how they're getting away with saying that it's nutritious. But then again, if you look at all the other non-organic, highly processed foods that are on the market, that's exactly what they're doing. They're taking something that actually is good and they're dumping all sorts of junk in it and pushing it on the kids.
Yeah, there's very, little of what's good in that product. How much there would be of hazelnuts in there. And cocoa is not the problem. And they say just a little bit of cocoa. Cocoa's not the problem. It's all the other stuff they've got in there.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if it were dark, organic, vegan chocolate, then I'd say, hey, you know what? Those are your antioxidants. And that's, you know, a whole other subject. But organic dark chocolate, also because of the chocolate industry where they have so much milk and sugar and all sorts of preservatives and, you know, the myriad of junk that they put in it, it takes something that is healthy and nutritious, dark chocolate, and, you know, makes it unhealthy.
Absolutely. And that's what, you know, so much of what kids' food is. I find it very sad because I see what a lot of kids are eating, and so much of it is processed and packaged. And packaged to minutia, too, like, you know, small packages of everything. I mean, I make my kids lunches every day, and they go off with containers of food, and they come home with containers that, you know, I clean up and sort out and whatever. And everything that seems to be going out there, if you look at, you know, what kids are eating, so little of it is made from home or just homemade, and everything is processed and in the little tiny packages of everything. So little of it is actually food, too. I don't know what's bulking it up, but little of it is actual real food. So, yeah.
Now, in regards to your the almond almonds, is that what you called it, almonds?
Almonds, yeah.
Yeah. How did you? So, what prompted you to use almonds out of all the nuts? Why almonds?
I don't know. I think I've been playing with the cashews and. Just kind of wanted to try something with almonds because sometimes, like you talk about, you use the same foods a lot, and I found I'd been using cashews a lot, and let's try using something else. It's interesting because they're not as creamy as cashews, because when you do a blend with cashews and you soak cashews, they become so creamy you don't even know that there's a nut in there. And when you do almonds, they don't get quite as creamy, even using the, you know, the power blender, what I call my Rambo blender. It's still like you can still get a little bit of texture, but they have a different taste. Like they just have this kind of earthiness or something that tastes really good, and they have a real clean flavor. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of play around with that a little bit and give people variety because cashews are so great in vegan recipes these days, but a lot of people, again, have allergies. And so I'm trying to be conscious of, okay, try not to use too much of this or give a substitute so that people can do it this way. I'm kind of always thinking of that as I go through my recipes and create things. And I had made a couple of cashew-based sauces, so it's time to switch things up.
Now, another question that I have for you is with just the incorporation of the nuts or even the chickpeas, I mean, there's so many different things that you've done where you've combined the nuts with the beans. Do you have any preference? I mean, should we be buying the raw nuts and the dried chickpeas, or do you think that it's okay if you buy them canned? Do you have any preference?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay, so I think the thing is with raw nuts is... toasted nuts, you get a little bit more flavor out of toasted nuts. But raw nuts, you know, there is a little bit more versatility. So I think, and if you buy toasted nuts, sometimes they're salted and that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I opt for the, you know, raw organic nuts. And then if you want to toast them a little bit and add a little bit of extra flavor, then you can do that yourself. And it doesn't take too long. Or if there's a nut that you really like that's toasted, then, you know, buy some of those. But I think you just have a little bit more flexibility if you buy them raw and, you know, you can keep them in the freezer in bulk, that kind of thing. And with beans, I would love to cook them all from scratch. I just don't have time to. And I do in batches on occasion I'll do some batches of chickpeas or white beans or something like that and freeze them up. But I buy the BPA beans like Eden Organic.
Now, speaking of Eden, Eden is actually offering to our listeners 20% off non-bulk orders if you use the code ORGVIEW, and that's ORGVIEW at checkout. And if you go to theorganicview.com, there's an image for Eden Foods. It has a direct link that will take you right to the site, and it will give you the code. So especially with the beans, I love Eden's beans, and I only buy their beans.
They taste cleaner than... And I can say that even I've bought some other BPA-free beans, and like, for instance, the chickpeas, their beans still taste better than other BPA-free beans.
I agree. I mean, it's interesting. When you first start eating chickpeas, you don't really know, you know, one bean from the other. And then when you start tasting some of the other brands, you're just like, wow, you know what? This bean just... You know, it's like, oh, okay, what was I, you know, punished? Yeah, you were punished for buying something other than Eden, right? But
right. And maybe that's why people, you know, don't think beans taste so good, because some of them don't taste so good when they're canned. And then if you try, you know, a better quality brand, well, you'll notice that they do taste much better. So.
I like the diversity. Sometimes I like the canned beans, and... When Eden came out with the beans with the, you know, the BPA-free cans, all I thought to myself was, no wonder why some of these other brands of beans don't taste as good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't know what they're doing to them. I mean, they list, you know, they have beans that are listed in the ingredients, but you don't know what preservatives they're using. And... that's a very big concern, because the more foods that we consume where we don't know exactly what the manufacturer is doing, that's more of a problem. And it's coming out as far as different allergies that we have to foods, as well as different health issues, so on and so forth. And when it comes to kids, you want to keep them as chemical-free as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is peculiar how much there is, you know, all the allergies that are prevalent now, and all of the food intolerances, it seems to be stemming from something we're doing. And, yeah, it's very, very concerning. I'm thankful, knock wood, my kids don't have any allergies at all. I did introduce food to them pretty carefully, you know, on a schedule where I introduced gluten-free grains first and then gluten grains, and just kind of worked up to the things that are higher potential for allergies. But still, you never know with that, and I'm just so happy that they don't. I still play around with lots of allergen-free recipes for other people, but it's strange what's going on with all the allergies.
Well, I think the bottom line is that the more that people connect to where their food is grown, how they're grown, and who's producing it, in other words, get to know your farmer, to know the people that are producing your food. Stop demanding all these varieties that are being imported from faraway lands where we can't control how it's grown or what it's subjected to. And the one thing that people really don't know anything about is the fact that when it comes to logistics, and what I mean by logistics is the transport of these foods from foreign countries, the people that are hauling this stuff, cargo is cargo. It's not like there's going to be a little delicate temperature-controlled section where they're going to keep one particular food. Everything's going to be lumped together.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's produce to shelf-stable foods, the bottom line is that it goes through that transport process. So if it's coming in from outside the country, it's irradiated. So do you really want to, is it really necessary to demand imported foods?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that's a very big problem. And the more that people demand locally grown organic foods, the better. I mean, it also affects the farmers because of the fact that some of these imported foods bring with it different diseases and pests. And these are the very reasons why some of the farmers are dealing with different crop issues, such as the citrus farmers in Florida. They're dealing with the psyllid that came from South America. And what I think is the most ironic thing is that Florida produces the best citrus in the world, and yet we're importing citrus from faraway countries.
Right.
This doesn't make sense.
Right.
And not to say that California citrus is bad. California citrus is great, too, but I'm just saying, it's ridiculous that we grow the best, or we produce the best citrus in this country, and this is what we're doing.
Right.
But getting back to the recipes, The next question that I have for you is polenta. There are a lot of people who screw up polenta. Now, I don't, but I know that I've had a lot of questions from the audience as far as working with polenta and how to properly cook it so that it's cooked. It's not too gummy and it's not too... I don't know, you could do all sorts of things to polenta to screw it up. Do you have any recommendations?
Well, it's kind of like, I mean, people seem to have the same thing with rice and all kinds of grains. It's easy to overcook it or it becomes too sticky, that kind of thing. The thing with polenta is it's really best when it's just made and then it doesn't stand and get too gummy. So it is a little, I find it's a little bit time sensitive. But even saying that, I have made it and then, you know, when we're sitting and having our dinner and the kids want more or whatever, if I go back and just work a little bit more non-dairy milk into it and keep it creamy, then it's great. But it does taste best when it's sort of just hot and nice and, you know, straight out of the pan, sort of pours right onto your plate and just has a nice creamy, luscious quality. Yeah, and I find adding a little bit of, you know, using some non-dairy milk, that makes it creamy. And it's funny because, you know, traditionally when you see polenta recipes, they tend to have something like Parmesan cheese in there. And I found that by adding just like a little bit of lemon zest to the polenta, it just kind of pops it and brings it up in flavor. It's not just creamy and flat, but it just kind of adds a little nice tangy note that just kind of comes through. It's really, really subtle, but it's nice.
Now, I just want to make one comment about the lemon zest. Folks, if you're going to use lemon zest, make sure that the lemons that you're using are certified organic, because otherwise you're basically getting the pesticides right in with whatever it is that you're serving. So just
that's
a little note about that.
Absolutely.
Now, you also wrote about a vegetable that I actually had not a good relationship with for most of my life, and that's cauliflower.
Oh, I thought you were going to say fennel.
No, fennel's kind of interesting, but I can't exactly talk about what I used to do to fennel, but because it involved certain things that I no longer eat, but now that I've learned to convert all my recipes basically to plant-based versions, well, still have a little bit to go, but I'm getting there. But cauliflower, I just wanted to talk about, because cauliflower, it's something you either love or you hate, and I never really liked cauliflower. I love vegetables, always loved vegetables. I was one of those odd kids that would love to eat Brussels sprouts. And, you know, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, asparagus, you name it, love vegetables. Didn't like cauliflower.
I've never liked cauliflower either. I'm a bit of a recent convert with cauliflower, too. And if my earlier book did not have cauliflower. So I understand that completely. And it's funny because I was on Facebook the other day and talking about how I was sort of just mocking up this cream of cauliflower soup, and it came out so good, and I loved it. And I had a few people saying, what, you're using cauliflower? Because for a long, long time, I just never liked it. But and I still don't like it raw. Don't like broccoli raw, and I don't like cauliflower raw. But I do like it with, you know, just that right amount of cooking. And so, yeah, I've used it in a few recipes here. Is it the roasted one that you're thinking of? Or
this is the almond roasted cauliflower. I actually began liking cauliflower once I started growing it in the garden. I bought it by accident, and I was annoyed. I was just like, ah, oh, great, now I'm growing this. And
I did the same thing. I bought it by accident, too. I thought it was kale and had cauliflower growing. That's funny.
Yeah, it's amazing how things kind of work out to your advantage, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you know what, I've got cauliflower, I'm just going to eat it and like it. And I did. That was the irony. I figured I had actually called a family member who happens to love cauliflower. I'm like, oh, guess what, you're going to get this summer tons of cauliflower. And then I had picked some, and I said, you know, I just put a little bit in a salad, and just the flavor, when you're growing organic cauliflower from your own garden, the flavor is just amazing. And then I'm like, hey now, you know,
you like
this
it.
Is good stuff.
But don't you find that happens too? I mean, I found, I mean, as long as I've been vegan, and it's been over 15 years, I still, my, you know, over time, there's new things I come to like. And so, you know, maybe one day I will like raw cauliflower. I just think your palate tends to accept and adjust and find more interesting things in food than it once did. So.
I agree. And plus, I have had a number of guests that they're raw organic vegans, and I like a lot of the raw recipes, and I think raw is fantastic, but I'm in New York. The winters are a little rough here. I mean, we had a very mild winter this past year, but every now and then I enjoy eating soup. I like coffee, and sometimes I like to eat bread. I'm a human being. What can I say? But I know. But I like hot foods sometimes. But during the summertime, especially since I have an abundance of freshly grown vegetables, you know, right outside my door, it's just it really does not take much time to make raw dishes, and it's not what people think. People tend to think that it's just eating salad after, you know, one salad after the other, and it's not. There's so many different things that you can do. Yeah. And, you know, it sounds like you have the ultimate blender.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of curiosity, did you spend over $1,000 for it?
No, because I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm an affiliate with my blog. So when you're an affiliate, they give you the blender to work with and test with and that kind of thing. But they are about $500 or $600. But, you know, I would buy it over, like, if someone were to take that blender out of my house, I would buy another one, because I use it at least once a day, sometimes two, three times a day. Absolutely.
Is it a juicer too, or just a blender?
What's that?
Is it a juicer too, or does it just puree and mince and all that?
It's a blend tech, so it's a blender, so it's not a juicer. So I use, I do in the morning, I do green smoothies every morning without fail, and they're just part of our day. We love them. And then if I'm making a sauce, like my macaroni that I have in the book, it's called Maco G's, and the sauce that's in there, it's a nut-based sauce, so I use the blend tech to whir that up. And mind you, some of the sauces can be used or can be done in a regular blender, like that sauce you could do in a regular blender. And then nut-based sauces and dressings and purees for ice creams and that kind of thing. It's a magical tool. It's really good.
And when you make your ice cream, do you use a machine or do you just pop it in the freezer? Do you have any particular method?
I have the KitchenAid attachment to the mixers. You know, the KitchenAid mixer that you use for, you know, cookies, etc. They have an attachment that is just a bowl, and it pops in the freezer, and then you can take it out and literally just pop it onto the base of the mixer. And so that's what I use. And, you know, I know a lot of people have, you know, ice cream makers. That's the only one I've used, but that's my method. And then sometimes I'll do a frozen banana kind of ice cream, and for that you just need a food processor, and you just put it in there and whir the thing up. I add some nut butter, that kind of thing. But for the ice creams, most of the ice creams in this book, I use the attachment to the KitchenAid mixer.
I actually have one of those, one of the Bronco ice cream makers. they're kind of fascinating. I mean, you have to use the rock salt and all that, but it depends upon how anal you want to be with the end result. If you want to make a true ice cream, you know, the texture without it crystallizing too much, then by all means use the machine. But say if you're just, you know, you're just kind of craving ice cream, but you don't want to go for the bad stuff. You want to go for, you know, the stuff that's plant-based. Is there any particular method that you would recommend to freeze it?
You could freeze it, and you'd have to take it out and give it some, like, stirring through during its freezing, or you could freeze it partially, take it out, pop it in the food processor, give it a whiz, get it back into the freezer, and then you might have to repeat that just because it, you know, it will set up very solid. And so if you can catch it as it's setting up and give it a word through the food processor, that works. And if you want something in an instant, like, you know, if you keep frozen bananas, I always keep bananas frozen chopped in the freezer.
That's a good idea to keep them chopped because then they're more versatile.
Yeah. They're easy to use. You can measure them, that kind of thing. So if you chop them up, throw them in a container or a bag and get them in the freezer, then you have them ready for smoothies and, you know, I'll use them for that instant ice cream fix and you plop them in your food processor, just a pinch of salt, some cashew butter is really good in there, and if you want a little bit of maple syrup, you could, but sometimes it's sweet enough you don't, and then you process that through. You could add a little bit of cinnamon, that kind of thing, and it's delicious. It's so creamy. The nut butter just makes it that much more luscious, and you don't need too much either, like a few tablespoons of, say, cashew butter to about maybe 3 cups of frozen bananas, and it's really good. Our kids love that one.
I think that's a smart idea to chop the bananas ahead of time because I used to leave them whole because they would make fruit smoothies out of them.
Yeah.
And most people think that the smoothies, especially because of all the commercial milkshakes, if you will, that are pushed on the mainstream market, that smoothies contain all sorts of animal-based products, so on and so forth. And the original smoothies were actually derived from plant-based ingredients.
Yeah.
Now, with your green smoothie that you mentioned this morning, do you have any particular recipe that you use, or do you kind of just have a basic and then you add what's available to it?
For this book, June, I actually put together a bit of a tutorial for people for making green smoothies because I find, and I do have a couple of examples of actual recipes, but I wanted to kind of give people the logistics of it more so than different recipes, so to understand what goes into the green smoothie, what you need to kind of balance out the bitterness of the greens, things you can add, which fruits work best, how to use, you know, how frozen fruit will make the green smoothie creamier, something like frozen mangoes or frozen bananas, and then sort of balancing out the green bitterness to the fruits. And certain greens are different. Like if you start out making a green smoothie with spinach, you don't need much sweet fruit with the spinach because it's not as strong tasting as something like kale. So you can kind of work up to the heartier greens. Like I started making my smoothies with spinach, and now I use either collard greens or kale. And
nice.
Yeah. And so I use collard greens quite a lot. And, you know, sort of my staple in the house is collard greens with some apple, a little bit of frozen banana, and sometimes some mango. And I'll throw in some chia seeds or hemp seeds, a little bit of ice water, and ready to go. Sometimes I put a little bit of cucumber in there, you know, kind of mix it up with vegetables too. And I find that, again, it's that palate thing where you might start with a lot of fruit to begin with, but you can start to then add more vegetables or more greens, and your palate will adjust. So it's kind of the thing you play with. But I like to give people a framework of, hey, this is how you can do it. It's, you know, you can use a regular blender. You can even use an immersion blender. And that's how I started making green smoothies, and just kind of play with it. And I give lots of tips and tricks and things of just to kind of get used to the proportions of fruit, the greens, and get used to it all.
One of the things that I tend to put in my breakfast smoothies is dandelion greens, just a couple, like 3 to 4, just because it's a great way to, quote, unblock things that are blocked.
Mm-hmm.
When you pick the baby greens, they're always sweet. The bigger greens are always going to be bigger. They're always going to be chewy, and also they're going to have a stronger flavor.
Yes.
But it's just like picking spinach leaves. When you have the big spinach leaves, they're always going to be rough. They're always going to be a little on the bitter side. But when you pick the young spinach leaves, it's always going to be sweeter. Now, that natural sugar is what you're kind of going for so that you don't have to add anything additional. And I just found that just the addition of just a few dandelion greens, they're very healthy as far as for your urinary tract, should I say. And they also are important for keeping your body regular.
Yes, that's that's a very good tip. And I think it's like you say, you know, when you just add a little bit and you kind of adjust and see how you go with it, it's surprising what kinds of things. Like when I first started making a kale smoothie, my husband, he just rolled his eyes and said, "Oh my God, Trina, I'm not going to have kale in my drink. Just stop." You know,
it's like you and that blender.
But, you know, it's kind of the evolution of how you eat and try new foods and all of that.
Now, speaking of which, how has he adapted to all these zillions of recipes that you come up with? I mean, to him, is it like a culinary safari, or is he like, okay, my crazy wife with her plant-based vegan stuff, okay, what are we eating tonight?
He's pretty lucky, right?
That's what I say.
I think so, too. And, you know, he's been great because I talk to people who sometimes, you know, the woman is vegan and the husband is not, or vice versa, or, you know, whatever the couple is, that's not always they're on the same page. And I would find that a little tricky. But he's been vegan with me. Like, we took the journey together, and when we had kids, they grew up vegan. And so they laugh at me, though. They're like, "Mom, you have hundreds and hundreds of recipes now. How many more do you need to make?" So, yeah, they get a kick out of it, but I think they eat pretty well. They're you know, they're a little spoiled sometimes.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, with the neighborhood kids, and especially if they go on play dates and stuff, I would think that especially some of your friends and their friends' parents obviously know that you're strict about adhering to a plant-based diet, but how do you handle, or what do you tell your kids when they're out with other kids and say, you know, they have a soccer game or something, and I guess the chaperone, or chaperones, should I say, they say, "Oh, yeah, let's stop at McDonald's after the game and get something to eat."
That happens. My oldest girl, she has gone on, you know, sports trips and that kind of thing. Like, just, I mean, back and forth to.
Yeah, that freaks me out. How do you handle that?
They're so used to it. It's so much part of their life now that they, and my eldest is almost 11, so she quite understands everything and she embraces it. And she's a real animal lover, anyhow. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, she's really good. Sometimes they go to Starbucks and that, and she might just get a juice. I always pack them with so much snacks when they go out that they are rarely wanting for anything anyhow, and I tend to pack enough for the car.
Yeah.
I'm always feeding people, sending food with people as they go. So, but they're both at age, my two older girls are both at ages where they really understand the diet, and
yeah,
they can explain it to their friends anyhow. And their teachers, you know, they know how we eat, and I tend to bring little goodie bags to school because there's always, you know, birthdays or treat days, so I have their little bag of snacks. But I find that the awareness in the last couple of years has really changed, and there's much more understanding and openness, so that when we started, it was quite frowned upon, and people were, you know, awed. You know, they thought we were quite odd with what we were doing. But now it's more...
Now they're coming to you saying, "Hey, Adriana, give me some of your recipes."
Yeah. What's going on? I want to try this. So, for instance, yeah, in my middle girl's class, I have three or four other moms who are cooking for my cookbooks and asking, you know, "How do you do this?" And so when they have party days, I'm not the one bringing in the vegan cookies now. It's someone else. So it's great. You know, it's like they're doing some of the work for me.
That's so fantastic.
Yeah. There's more awareness, and it's just coming along on its own.
Adriana, can you tell our audience what your website is, and also your other book, and how they can keep up with you on social media?
For sure. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. My name is, you know, my handle is Drina Burton on Twitter. And my new website will be plantpoweredkitchen.com.
Love
and
it.
And my current blog is vivelavegan.blogspot.com.
Fantastic. Drina, your book, Let Them Eat Vegan, is amazing. I absolutely love all of the inspiration that you've given me, and you've just, I mean, perfect timing, because I was kind of getting bored with a lot of the things that I was making, but you really, just some of your combinations are just fantastic. Great job on this book, and I definitely would love to have you come back to talk about your other book. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I had a really good time talking with you, June, and I'd love to have a chat again. Thanks so much.
Everyone, we are out of time, but thank you so much for tuning in. And if you've missed the show, you can always subscribe to The Organic View on iTunes or visit our podcast archives at www.theorganicview.com. Have a great day, everyone.